This episode of The Disciplined Investor is supported by Our Crowd. Our Crowd helps you get early access to the private markets. If you're interested in investing, join Our Crowd at OurCrowd.com/TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Elections are only 2 weeks away, and all major U.S. indices are now in the green for 2020. We have some talk about inflation, and we're going to discuss what areas to invest in, and all eyes are on stimulus, not looking likely before the election. All this and much more on episode number 684 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, here we are coming into the election and seeing the most money spent ever in history on an election. Right now, we're estimated at over $11 billion spent already, and we have 2 weeks to go where the major push is going to come in. And amazing, impressive. I mean, I don't know what exactly describes this, but kind of just incredible that we're looking at this much money spent. And well, we'll talk a little bit about that and some of the other things about how money is spent and how it impacts you. Let me do a quick intro. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm president and host of this show, president of Horowitz & Company, investment advisory firm. I'd like to welcome our new listeners that have come on board, whether you just found out about us through Spotify or Amazon or iTunes, whether you just heard about it from a friend, and now maybe, I don't know, maybe you're looking to get more disciplined as you invest for your future. And this is what we do here. This is what we're all about. This is what we've been doing for the last 12, 13 years, weekly, each week, and every week, and what we try to accomplish throughout this. So with that, let's kind of get into some of the things that are happening. And right now, you know, what I'm really finding is that there's a lot of cross currents. You're seeing this too. This is not news. This is not something that you're like, oh, look, boy, that Andrew, he's a smart guy. He's seeing cross currents. No, he's seeing headwinds. He's seeing like a lot of controversy. No. You know about this, and all these things are colliding as we move towards the end of the year 2020. And last week we focused on this, right? We talked about this whole idea of stepping back, filtering the information, and then being careful not to make rash decisions, not to make decisions in haste on an emotional basis, right? This emotional situation that's going to happen now over the next, let's say, definitely 2 weeks until the election is done. And then after that is going to pretty much be, I would say, heightened. There'll be people freaking out, dependent on the result, assuming we get a quick result on the election. There'll be people that are happy. There's going to be people that are saying, oh my gosh, look at this pandemic. Look what's going on around the world. We saw another spike in overall cases, and we're seeing hospitalizations go up, and the news that's trying to amplify the negative on it and the news that's trying to tamp down and show the positive on it. We have misinformation campaigns, and all of this is just too much output to input effectively. Does that make sense? I mean, it's one thing to get news and information and just find out about something from a source and say, okay, well, thank you for that information. There's those facts, and I'm going to assimilate those into my thinking. And then there's all of a sudden this idea of, well, I need to check on the truthfulness and the veracity of what that person is saying, what that news media is reporting. And then you have to go to three or four different sources to try to average all the information. I mean, that is a difficult task. Who needs that? It's aggravating. It's time consuming. It's just not worthwhile. The process to get information is not supposed to be this difficult. It's not supposed to be so hard. But that's what we have right now, especially with all these, as I said, cross currents going on. Now, we've been talking about how to deal with these markets, and especially for those that are really concerned about the valuations and all the items in the news and you know, should I be involved in this market? Should I just sell out right before the election? Then I'll figure out what to do afterwards. Remember, one of the things we talked about many weeks ago was this idea of 1 foot in and 1 foot out. How to effectively manage the risk in a portfolio where you know that, well, for my future, I need to be invested in something solid. I need to be invested somewhere that I can make some money. But yet I don't want to be in because of all the things that are going on and the near-term risk that's happening. How do I deal with that conflicting conversation that's going on in my head? How do I deal with all of this? And we talked about one of the things to deal with and do is create a portfolio that you're either dollar cost averaging in or out of on a couple of different bases. I'm not going to go over all that. We talked about that, you know, a lot, but this idea of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And even a few episodes ago, we talked about the idea of just general diversification. The concept that diversification is not just, you know, what a lot of people think. It's just, oh, I have all these different investments. Oh, look at all these great investments I have. I'm so well diversified. Meanwhile, they have, let's just say, give an example that everybody could deal with here. They got a technology fund. They have a large cap growth fund. They have Apple in their portfolio. You have Microsoft in your portfolio. And maybe you have Netflix. Like, I have like five or six different things. But you know what? We talked about the idea of overlap and how when you look at diversification, this concept is not just the idea of having many different things. You need to know what you have. You need to know how they react to each other, how they correlate. Are they all moving up, all moving down on the same news? Is there any way that you're going to see that there's one that has the opportunity to move up potentially if others move down? Like, is there any, are there any non-correlated assets or negatively correlated assets? And I talked about this flower garden theory where when you have a flower garden, you don't want to have all the same flowers because basically if they're like in patience, they'll come up, they'll look beautiful for a while, then they'll drop dead, die off, and all you have is dirt in your garden. You want to have roses and you want to have evergreens and you want to have heliconias and you want to have impatiens and you want to have hibiscus. I don't know. You want to have all these different things that are in your portfolio so something is blooming at any given time of the year. That would be the ideal way to manage a portfolio diversification from a risk standpoint and to provide you for that kind of all-weather portfolio that everybody has always been after. Not as easy as it seems, though. And we've also been talking about alternative assets and how looking outside the scope of just the stock market can be helpful to kind of adjust the risk parameters on your portfolio. Okay, so we've been really digging down into this whole portfolio construction, this idea of diversification, the theory behind that. But there's a risk that we haven't really talked about. It's kind of invisible. And this risk is impactful. It's impactful on a portfolio. It's impactful on money every single day. It's one of those things that's kind of hard to detect. It's kind of like air, right? It's out there, but where is it? I know it's there, but I really can't necessarily see it unless I really look at it under maybe, I don't know, a microscope or some other methodology. I can't really taste it because we're so used to it. It's there all the time, right? Can't smell it necessarily unless there's another odor in the air. It's there. So this risk is ever present in one way or another. And the other thing that's a problem is it's kind of difficult to guard against. So some of you may know what I'm talking about at this point. It's inflation. So all these other things we talked about, right? The risk of having too tightly or a non-diversified portfolio and overlap and the idea of news risk and all the other things. This one area is something we really need to focus in. Inflation, because it is something that impacts and affects your buying power into the future. Now, a lot of times we hear right now, well, there's no inflation because it's lower than the Fed's 2% target, right? We've heard about this. Oh, nah, there's no inflation. Meanwhile, everything costs a lot more. We're finding that maybe not fuel, but we're finding that our insurance costs more, our housing costs more, maybe our water bill costs more, food at the store to a degree, depending on what you're buying, costs more. I mean, here we are in a situation where we're being told on a regular basis that inflation is not a worry because it's below a level. But I want you to think about something. It's not zero. It's not zero. Therefore, there is inflation. It may not be above a level that is quote unquote concerning for the Fed in a way that they're going to have to tighten up because they see this runaway level of inflation, but there is inflation. We think that, 1.5% a year, not so bad. But let's think about this for a second. Let's just take a moment and really focus on this whole idea. 2% annual inflation could definitely put a dent in your purchasing power over time. Because at 2%, just thinking about this very simply, very, very simply, your money's worth 20% less than it is right now in 10 years. Now, that's on a non-compounding basis. If we do it compounding, it's like 22%. Think about that. All things being equal, this level of 2% inflation that we are not concerned about, because it's not that big of a deal, right? It's only 2%. It's not the target of the Fed. The Fed says only get worried if it's over 2%. And now, even with their inflation averaging, they're saying, you know what, don't worry about it. Let's let it run hot for a while. They're not talking about the impact that it has on our ability to buy goods in the future. So if we say this another way, we think about this, like goods, on average, considering a broad-based diversification of what's in that basket of goods and concept, and considering an average of 2% is going to cost 22% more in 10 years. Now, you could do the math on other areas like, what, housing, insurance, education. I mean, these things have a much higher rate of inflation to begin with. And we get to the point that there's a level that we just can't ignore, this, in particular when it comes to savers. And what I mean by savers, when I talk about savers, I talk about those that are in their retirement. Let's just use retirement as an example. People on a fixed income. And why are they having such a hard time right now? I mean, I could give you stories, right, in the past. But let's think about this. Right now, when money is in the bank earning 1%, inflation's at 2%, the relative value of the principal is eroding. We don't have to be too up on mathematics, on economics, on investing thesis and principles. If we have a 1% interest rate that we're earning and inflation is running at 2%, we're going backwards by 1% a year. It's like putting your money in a mutual fund. Think about this, right? So we put our money in a mutual fund, the XYZ mutual fund. They have a fee of 2% per year, and you're making a gross return of 1% a year. You're losing 1% annually. Kind of let's take that to the next extreme, right? We have a 5% inflation rate or a 5% fee on that ETF. And you're only making 2%, you have a net 3% that you're losing on an annual basis. That's not funny. I mean, that's a serious situation where you're actually losing value on a regular basis to this invisible, you know, this kind of like thing that's out there that we really don't quantify as risk that often. But it's something we really need to confront when we invest, because the notion that the ever-present level of inflation is out there, and we start thinking about a 40-year-old, which maybe has a 45-year life expectancy or more. And think about now compounding that only 2% or that 1.5% long term. It really has an impact. Now, the question a lot of you are probably saying is, you know, do we have inflation? Is this something to worry about? Listen, if we think about back to 2007, 8, 9, where we had this collapse of the financial, the global financial infrastructure, right? And the financial system was on the brink, and the Fed and central banks around the world came in with gobs of money at low interest rates. And where did we see inflation? Everybody was all excited about the potential. Nowhere. But this is kind of important because you wonder why so many people back in the 90s were plowing their monies into insane valuations when there was, you know, the thought of this whole inflationary environment. And when people were worried about, well, you know, different times they were thinking about, oh, you know what, I'm running for yield, because then they were starting to think about at times that yields were going down. So depending on where we are in the cycle, right? And they start pushing money into things, chasing yield. Low grade ones, lower grades moving forward. And if they couldn't get the yield, they would even go out further on the yield curve and get a even lower overall quality bond. And therefore, what was happening was they were trying desperately to keep pace with inflation. They were desperately trying to keep pace with their erosion of their purchasing power on their money. And therefore, they were forced to, kind of like where we are now. We're forced to reach for risk. We're forced to go outside the boundaries on some areas of valuations because we want to go for that. The reach for yield is real. The need to keep up income with higher price in the future is not fake news. So with yields this low, with inflation possible, what's the outlook over the next 3, 5, 10 years? I mean, do you really think that inflation is going to stay this low for a long period of time? And that we're going to have yields that are in those levels for the next 15 years? Do you think that all the stimulus, both fiscal and monetary, that's entered the global economies is going to keep inflation at bay? And if not, how about some thoughts on where are some areas to invest in that may help? We're going to discuss that right after I tell you about our crowd. You know, a lot of people have wished that they were in on the early action of some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020. And with our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, probably is early, right? So if you're an accredited investor, you can join our crowd for free. Go to our crowd, OurCrowd.com/TDI. And you can review all the current deals. No payments are involved until you decide to participate in a deal. Now, today, you can join our crowd's investment in Mimic. Mimic explains that their tiny robotics allow surgeons to be less invasive and safely perform gynecological surgery so women heal faster and have less scarring. And Mimic is a much-needed innovation in a rapidly growing multi-billion dollar robotic surgery market. So you can get in early on Mimic and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/TDI. So if you're interested in investing, you need to just join Our Crowd. The Our Crowd account is free. Just go to Our Crowd, OurCrowd.com/TDI. And check it out. Now, where did we leave off? We left off, on the idea of inflation, right? Yeah, of course. And some of the things that we are going to be looking at with regard to where are those opportunities and where should I be looking to maybe think about putting some money to work with regard to inflation-related investments. Kind of not specifically and only and exclusively for inflation, but Where are those areas? And we do have the potential for inflation. Now, whether or not it comes to fruition in, you know, the old runaway inflation that we've all been worried about for many, many years and maybe thought that, hey, that's sometime in the future, or whether it's just simply a very small, slight uptick in where we are at this point, because I think the Fed did telegraph pretty well that they are thinking that inflation is something that is coming. And they didn't want us to get too concerned about, upset about, and get, you know, our nose bent out of joint. So here are some of the areas that you can invest in. I kind of put together a little bit of a discussion. Some of them are obvious. Most of them are pretty obvious. But I thought we'd review it anyway, because it's an important area to really focus in on, considering where we are. So the first one, and this is in no particular order. It's not like this is better than the other. Just things to consider. Okay, so we have stocks. Stocks. I mean, there's clearly evidence that stocks are a good way to invest in inflationary times, both in disinflationary and inflationary. But generally speaking, you know, you could look no further than things like Latin America countries and what's gone on there when inflation have spiked. We've seen different areas in Argentina and Venezuela, crazy levels of inflation. I mean, like some of them absurd, right? I mean, in the hundreds and thousands, and even to a point, hundreds of thousands of percent on an annual basis. We're not really talking about that kind of inflation, but if you look at their markets and you look at the various markets of those areas, you'll notice something interesting, that their stock market is up considerably. In fact, the Venezuela stock market is up about 500% this year. Their inflation has been in the hundreds of percent over the last few years. But if you think about it, you're like, whoa, I want to invest in the Venezuelan market. Well, unfortunately, it's going to be a problem because you're going to invest in their currency. Their currency is losing value, and you're not going to make any money probably with that particular trade unless you hedge out, and that would be a problem. But if you're inside of Venezuela and you have this going on where your dollar is losing value dramatically, and you did, in fact, invest in the stock market, understanding that there was a massive erosion going on and devaluation of your currency, the only thing you could have done to keep pace with it was obviously to get the hell money out of there, or maybe even invest in stocks. This isn't a great example, by the way. Just to let you know, I'm not loving this example, but it's something that I just want you to consider. Just an illustration that stocks are one way of keeping up with inflation. And one of the things you could do also is, and again, this is stock related, and how do you invest? Do I invest domestically? Do I invest internationally? So one idea, if we are having inflation here in the U.S., is to consider investing also in U.S. developed markets and other non-U.S. Developed markets and other areas, especially if the U.S. dollar remains weak. So going outside the U.S., naturally, if the U.S. dollar comes up, then this is going to be a headwind for non-U.S. stocks that are not hedged. So it's going to be a headwind for non-U.S. But if inflation is localized in the U.S., and I'm not sure this is going to be the case, then there's something to consider here on an unhedged basis. Now, we can go back and forth on this, right? Because if we have inflation, does that mean that the Fed's going to start increasing rates? And if they increase rates, does that mean there's money going to pour in? If money pours in, does that mean that it's going to bring the dollar value up? If the dollar value comes up, does that mean it's going to be bad to invest internationally? I can make that case too. But I want to really focus on the idea that stocks in general, not trying to say go put it all into stocks, but stocks in general are considered an inflation hedge. Probably not the ones you've thought about in the past as the obvious go-to. But stocks, generally speaking, are those companies that will continue to do well over time. And depending on if we have inflation, which means the economy is heating up, that means, well, earnings should be better for many companies, right? And therefore, that's one thing. Secondly, obviously, you have the situation with the non-U.S. as well and the combination plan I talked about with regard to the dollar and the impact there. So stocks are on the list of those assets that we would consider for inflationary times. Now, let me just mention one point here that could be very problematic. And that is if inflation gets too bad, too high, too hot, and the Fed starts to choke off economic activity, by slamming rates higher, that's really not the best thing for stocks. So if we have inflation that continues and it's kind of like this going over time, but not too bad, you know, not too hot, not too cold, just right. Well, then that's an area. We've seen that. We've seen that vividly over the last, what, 10 years. Very clear. So as long as the Fed doesn't choke off economic activity, as long as we have a constant situation, even a higher rate of inflation, but not so much that it's, you know, out of control, stocks. Now, there's also the second group, which is, we'll consider it tangible assets, like precious metals and commodities, probably being the two prime examples of something that you could actually touch. Gold, silver, copper, platinum. Some of these are industrial metals. Some of these are precious metals used for different types of situations. But the fact is that historically, these have worked well as inflation hedges. Hard assets. Again, these things that you can grab onto or work better in times and right now, easier than ever to really invest in. Back a number of years ago, it was very difficult to actually get your hands on gold. You'd have to buy a bar. You know, what would you buy? You buy coins. I remember I bought coins. I remember this very distinctly. As a matter of fact, back in the 1980s, it was late 80s, I think in 88, maybe it was 88, 89, I went and I bought some gold. I bought it in the form of Chinese panda coins. I bought a selection of the quarter ounce from 82 through like 86 or 87. And that's worked out pretty well. They've come up in value very nicely over the years. They sit very safely locked up. And one of the things and the reasons I bought the coins was I thought, you know, not only do I get a very high content of gold in these particular coins, these Chinese pandas, but also I get the potential of the numismatic value appreciation if that ever happens. The rarity value of the coin itself, assuming I keep it in good shape, assuming I don't melt it down. So I get that as well. And that's worked out okay. And they're small enough that I don't have to worry about carrying them up from a you know, safe in the basement that may weigh 400, 500 pounds or whatever the amount of gold you have in a bag is. I mean, these, you know, it's small enough that you can kind of carry around. But now these days, it's even easier to do that, right? So we have these gold and silver ETFs. We have platinum. We have precious metal ETFs. We have mutual funds, commodities. There's no reason not to have some form of commodity exposure in a portfolio right now. I mean, you can invest in a spread of these to keep diversified, right? So I think when we have this idea that inflation could be on the horizon, maybe not today, but remember, markets are forward-looking, and you saw how well gold has done this year, right? Gold is up on a tear this year. We have a combination of issues going on there. We have, well, civil unrest. We have concern about the political environment, obviously concern about this whole pandemic. We have the fiscal situation with money being poured into the markets. We have the Fed with interest rates at an all-time low. I mean, all these things have gone into the discussion of, hey, you know what? Gold. And for those of you that are into Bitcoin, I'm not a big fan of them. That's not tangible. Can't touch it. Can't hold it. Can't have it. Which you may say, well, that's better. I'd rather have that. Not my thing. I don't think it really acts as a hedge in those kind of inflationary times, even though it is offset on the dollar. I'd rather have something that is physical in this situation. For a lot of different reasons in this category. If you want to put Bitcoin in the, we'll call it the currency category, alternative currency, okay. You want to say it's for inflation? Not sure, not proven, have no idea. You want to say it's there for diversification? All right, I'll go along with that. But in this discussion today, when we're really focusing in on the idea of where are the ideas to help my portfolio keep diversified somehow in an inflationary environment moving forward, considering all the things that we know, we have stocks, and now we have commodities. We have tangible assets. You could even throw, if you want, maybe, you could throw oil in there if you want. You could touch that. Now, where's the next place? Probably one of the better places that I like overall. It's tips. Tips. These are Treasury inflation protected securities. And if you haven't used those in a portfolio, because maybe you're young and you don't have any bonds in your portfolio. Maybe you're older and you're just looking for, you know, certain clipping of coupons, if you will. But tips are a pretty good place, I think, in an environment that could be inflationary. Let me give you a quick working definition on this. So basically, it's a type of U.S. Treasury bond that is indexed to inflation in order to explicitly protect investors from inflation. And twice a year, the tips pay a fixed rate. They pay the principal value of tips changes based on the inflation rate. Therefore, the rate of return includes the adjustable principal, the adjusted principal. So when you think about that, there have been times that there's been really nothing to gain on tips if inflation isn't, you know, if we have no inflation or minimal inflation. But year to date, the tips ETF is up close to about 9%. And that's in supposedly a time that we have, well, right? We talked about this, little or no inflation. And if you think about where we are today, as we talked about at the top and introduction of this whole topic today, it's not that we don't have inflation. We have inflation. It's just under the levels that are acceptable by the Fed. This arbitrary 2% that they and other central banks have now put on their inflation rate target is where we're below, but it still is inflation. So we see that year-to-date tips are up. One of the reasons is that people are buying bonds. Bond yields have gone down, and therefore principal values have gone up. And, you know, when you look at this and you look at all bonds together, long bonds, short bonds, I mean, generally did well, especially because the Fed has been buying nonstop trillions, not billions, trillions of dollars worth of sovereign debt in the U.S., as well as corporate debt, as well as munis. So listen, what do we think? Do we think that rates are going to stay lower forever, this level? I mean, we know that we have a rising national debt now at about $27 trillion and counting. That's a problem. We know that if, in fact, rates go higher due to the fact that the Fed's balance sheet has ballooned to over $7 trillion worth of asset holdings, the impact, the effect of raising rates even, I don't know, 0.25%, 0.5% could cost serious money. Because as the government is refinancing that debt that comes due or issuing new debt that they need to keep on running this massive deficit, it's going to cost more. The Fed is acutely aware of this, right? I mean, they're like, you know, listen, if we bring up rates, you know, one of the problems we're going to have is that it's going to cost us an extra $500 million on that bond. So they're working very diligently at keeping these rates down. And we don't want the cost to go up for the government. As the cost goes up for the government, one of the problems you have is where do they get that money from? Surprise! You, it's me, it's all of us. We're going to have to pay higher taxes. That's not something we want. I mean, it would be a lot nicer if we had less debt outstanding right now. It would be a lot nicer if this never happened, this whole pandemic. It would be a lot nicer if the financial crisis didn't happen. Okay, fine, I got that. But we are here, and what we have to deal with now is a situation that is pretty much irreversible, where we have massive amounts of debt outstanding, and the problem we have with regard to the interest rates staying down for a long period of time, which almost forces the hand and makes even a better case for my understanding of where inflation is going to go over the next dozen years. Because there's no way they could really raise these rates. And this is, again, why I'm going to pound this right now. This is why the Fed has been telling us that, you know what, we are not going to worry about near-term inflation. They are hoping against all hope that they can get some inflation going and keep everything balanced without raising their rates. So this is a big issue. They're basically in a rock and a hard place right now because they really can't raise rates due to all this excess amount of debt outstanding on the books, as well as the needs it's going to be for the U.S. to continue to issue stimulus in the amount of $1, $2, $3, $5, $10 trillion as this pandemic rolls and roils the country and the world moving forward. So now if you've been worried about all the things you see out there and all the concerns that are going on and these cross currents that we talked about in the beginning, and the news and the inability to find out where the real facts are and the election that's coming up and the pandemic. And I've just given you one more thing to worry about, and I apologize. I apologize. But my intent is actually not to make you paralyzed, not to make you nervous, not to put one more thing on your shoulders that you have to walk around with. But my intent is to actually inspire you. To try to get you to think outside of the markets and see what we see every day. Maybe even in a weird way, take a stroll into the future. Kind of look what's going on out there and how things are going to play out considering all that we know right now. Could all of this just simply evaporate over time and somehow the perfect plan is put together where we don't have an inflationary environment, somehow we extinguish the debt, somehow the dollar stays strong, somehow the markets and valuations are acceptable and reasonable at these levels, and the pandemic just goes away. There's no more need for, it's possible, I guess, maybe with the old vaccine theory that we've been talking about forever, that there'll be a vaccine, even though some of the hopes are dimming a bit from some of the companies right now. But that doesn't mean that out of nowhere we can't have a major breakthrough, right? And that would clean up a lot of problems, theoretically. Again, this is theoretically. But there is the opportunity to have all this work out pretty well and not change anything that you're doing. However, wouldn't it be nice to have a decent plan put into place that, well, if it doesn't, and we do get some inflation, maybe I should be looking at diversifying a little bit into some of these areas that have some, we'll call it protection from inflation, or at least opportunity. It's not going to all work perfectly. There's no way. This is investing. Nothing works perfectly. You know, there's no perfect arbitrage in investing. And this is kind of what we're talking about. We're talking about an arbitrage here. We're talking about rates go up. What's the other side of that equation where I can make money? So talking about inflation moving higher, where is that other side? Where am I going to arbitrage out that risk? So think about these areas. We talked about stocks. We talked about tangible assets in the form of maybe metals. And we talked about tips. Three areas that we talk about today. So take a stroll into the future. Think about the things that are out there. I always want you thinking about the future and how it will look financially for you. So why not take the time to plan for this, right? Look at the potential for inflation, how it will impact your life. And as we know, I'm going to bring up an old phrase that we all know about. If you haven't heard about that, well, here we go. It's very simple. If you fail to plan, your plan is to fail, right? So if we fail to plan for what looks like to be somewhat out there, we don't have to get crazy. We're not talking about a major component of your portfolio. We're talking about just part of your portfolio. Doesn't have to be right now either. It could be sometime in the future. But this is some things that you need to start thinking about. And as we come to an end, I think it's also important to kind of segue over for a second outside of this area of inflation into the topic of where we are. We're in the midst of not only, of course, the election, but we're in the midst of earnings season. Earnings season. We got three things we're dealing with right now. The all E's, election, earnings, economics, the three E's. The three E's. So what we're looking at right now is next week coming up with some more financials. Some of the financials report already, they did a good job, but they weren't liked by the markets for whatever reason. So there was some better than expected numbers on the top and bottom line for most of these companies. There was some better numbers when it came to loan loss provisioning. Some of them didn't like it. But the problem is this yield curve being flat is still a big problem. We're going to start to see some of other areas in the financial industry and sector report next week. Also, the big tech names are going to start to report. We got Intel, Tesla, Netflix, Snap, Texas Instruments, Citrix. This is going to be that. Then the following week, we're going to see some big names also reporting. You know, we get the Microsofts and all that. So a couple of things. As a reminder, I want to mention that Monday we have our pop-up Q&A webinars. You can register for those. Ask any question that you want on any topic related to finance, and we're going to try to dig down and get you the answer. No question is too small. So if you got a question, you can go over there. Now, the way to do this is you got to register for the webinar. You'll get an email with the registration, with the information link about it and a reminder. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com on the top right there. It says register for webinar. So just do that. We also have a new TDI Managed Growth Strategy virtual tour, a few weeks old. Short video, talks about the strategy. You can check on that and on the TDI website, the disciplinedinvestor.com website is on there too. Just scroll down and click on the strategy that you want to look at, and you can see more about that. But I think it's something right now that you want to look at if you haven't looked at it yet. It gives you a nice little 3 or 4 minute discussion about what's going on, how we deal with it. I think it looks really snappy too. The new version of this, I think they did a great job on this. Tuesdays, DH Unplugged, not to miss, myself and John C. Dvorak, we're talking there. And now you can get The Disciplined Investor as well as DH Unplugged on Amazon Music, iTunes, Spotify, and other great podcast directories. So with that, inflation as a main topic and what to do about it in this discussion, continuing on this kind of process that we've been building for diversification, for looking outside the box, for levels of overlap that we may have in a portfolio, how to set things up. And this is what we do, by the way, on a regular basis every day with the portfolios for our clients. I mean, this is how we manage our stuff. This is what we're looking at. The things I'm talking to you about are things that I talk about every single day. And as I go through meetings on various areas of the discussions of portfolios, and as we then set up our portfolios and our outlook, and as we then implement those into the portfolios for our clients, these are the topics that are discussed. So you kind of have a window into what we're talking about on a regular basis. That's how this works. That's what we're doing. So hopefully use it wisely. If you want to become a client, well, just go over to disciplinedinvestor.com, click on the contact us, and just have at it. We'll get back to you. We'll figure out a time to get together. Look at the TDI virtual tour, the strategy, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which is a long, short strategy, kind of some hedging in there, et cetera. Not your ordinary strategy of just long only. And of course, Investology. Until next week, thank you for joining me. Make sure to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever else has the ability to do these reviews. And I really do appreciate them. I read them. And have a profitable, have a safe, have a healthy week. I'll see you around the corner. Thanks so much. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.